And now it's time for the Sports Kings from Queens.
You can't stop a pass or a run. Otherwise, we're in great shape. Hey, what's wrong with playing Mon in the game? He tackles. Huh? We got all these old pros. Nobody tackles. He's only got one chance to make his football team, and he acts like he's got it made. He ain't got nothing made. Gentlemen, are you going to put your big man in, or are you going to stand here? We're trying to get the ball to keep it about a week. How the hell are you going to get knocked the back? Well, these guys are almost gutless. And the ones that aren't that are brainless.
We got had to scramble out of there quite a lot of sacks.
Well, we didn't block them, but we made up for it by not tackling.
Duffy Doherty always had a dog because he said when you go home after a defeat, the dog will be your friend. My wife had a dog, and we got beat once by Notre Dame, 51-0. I came home, and it bit me.
Welcome to the Sports Kings from Queens, where all the sports talkers royal real and straight from the boroughs. Today is Wednesday, January 28th. This is episode 215. I'm Gino, joined by my co-hosts, Kevin and Darren. Please catch us wherever you get your podcasts. Like, subscribe, follow us on Facebook, YouTube, Instagram. Give us a look, join our pages. If you got something to say, tell us. We want to hear from you. Tonight, we're talking AFC-NFC championships. We got teams headed to the Super Bowl on February 8th. And we go around the world of sports because there's a lot of stuff going on right now. We'll start it off with the AFC championship game. New England beat Denver 10-7. It was a gritty survival test. Massive blizzard conditions in the second half caused some chaos. New England secured their 12th Super Bowl appearance by outlasting Denver. And we're getting going here. So, all right. So we had a defensive battle defined by snow and freezing temperatures. We got reasons New England moved on. So Drake May had a good game. I won't say great. He threw for only 86 yards. But him running was a huge reason why he was able to get this game going. He led all players with 65 rushing yards, including a 28-yard run that set up the winning field goal. And he had a final 7-yard scramble and to ice the game. But New England's defense dominated in this game. They held Denver to only 32 yards in the second half. Turnover margin. New England forced two critical turnovers. They recovered a fumble in the second quarter. It set up May's touchdown. Christian Gonzalez sealed the win with his late interception in the game. But we can't just talk about what New England did right. We got to talk a little bit about what Denver did wrong. We got to talk about the fourth down stop. We got to talk about special teams field position. Kev, let's talk about Denver a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, they came out, couldn't have asked for a better start. The early touchdown. I mean, the one play that they made the entire game, you know, when Stidham hit Mims for the 52 yards, set them up for the touchdown. They're up 7-0. They've got control of the game at that point with the backup quarterback in there, and they get to 4th-and-1 at the 14. With, you know, that the storm, you know, there's going to be snow, you know, there's going to be weather, you know, the wind's coming. Everything else, points are at a damn premium. Why the hell is Sean Payton not taking the field goal there while the conditions were fine to take points? Take your damn points with a backup quarterback. You have a chance to go up 10. You have a chance to go up 2 scores. 4th and goal at the 1, I can see going for it. This is 4th and 1 at the 14. Even if you pick it up, you still got another 12 or 13 yards that you've got to still navigate to get a touchdown against a defense that's been playing great in the playoffs. How badly did Sean Payton screw this up?
He overthought himself. He outthought himself. He thought that, you know, he thought he could go for the jugular early with a backup quarterback. And like you said, that big 52-yard pass to Mims was amazing, right? He threw for 81 yards the rest of the way on 16 completions. I said last week, I was like, he's got to throw the ball long to set up the short. He threw one long pass until the interception. Yeah. You got to mix it up a little bit. And it's not. I know New England's defense is good, G, and they were really good. You were 100% right. But, man, did they sit there and they gave them so much credit. They sat on those short passes on the outside. They had no shot of doing anything. And I think Peyton, you know, just overthought himself. You go up two scores with a backup quarterback, and you try to win the damn game.
And then, Gino, you got into the mistake there. Late second quarter, third and four at their own 33. Stidham drops back. They run this, you know, I think he's rolling out to his left. Gets the pressure. Keeps going backwards, backwards, backwards. Finally tries to throw the ball away. His momentum carries him back. That is actually a backward pass was the official ruling on the play, recovered by New England. You know, terrible job by Stidham there. At that point, take the damn sack.
Take the sack. Exactly, Kev.
And he's trying to throw that short pass to the left that was covered because they sat on everything short. He didn't know what to do, so he just holds the ball out like a moron and keeps running backwards.
And then tries a two-handed shovel pass, you know, that – you know, I didn't think it was intentional grounding. I thought, yes, it didn't go that near him, but you know, the running back was sort of there. I was a little upset if it was an intentional grounding call, and then you start looking at the replays, you go, yeah, it did go backwards. That is a backwards pass.
By a good yard. It wasn't really that close, like a yard and a half almost.
Yeah. So New England, you know, recovered it. You know, didn't get the touchdown on the return because they blew the whistle, but rightfully so, I think. The football god said, nope, New England, you deserve the touchdown. They got the touchdown to tie it at 7-7. I mean, this is a game that it should have been 10-0. They should have been punting there at 10-0. Instead, it's 7-7 before you know it.
And the third quarter, the drive that came out of the break, the 9-minute, 24-second drive, 16 plays, 64 yards, they got a field goal. It was their only drive of the game.
Yeah.
New England didn't do much outside of that. I know you said May didn't play badly. He did play badly throwing it. He ran the ball great.
Yeah.
He had timely scrambles. I thought that, you know, listen, May has not looked great in the playoffs as a passer. Doesn't matter. He wins, right? Who cares? He comes out of there. Doesn't matter who he's going up against. Doesn't matter what the other quarterback does. He's finding a way to win games, G. He's finding a way to get ahead.
No, exactly. I mean – listen, there were four missed field goals in the game. You know, Lutz had the missed field goal before the half. It was a 54-yarder, a little windy. I can't blame him, but you know what? It's a missed field goal.
Stidham went backwards on the third down. That field goal would have been a little closer, but he went backwards on the third down. Throw the ball away.
You know, then at the end of the half, New England tried the 63-yarder. That was no good. So okay, fine.
I don't blame Borealis for that.
And then we get into the second half with the weather. I mean, it's like blizzard conditions out there. And now, you know, I wonder in Peyton's head if he's thinking back, he's like, damn, I should have taken that field goal in the first half when there wasn't a blizzard condition going on. You know, what a difference between the halves, right?
Yeah. I mean that's his case where fourth and five of the 28 in brutal conditions. It's a 45-yarder. It's not a chip shot by any means. That's a point where I would have been more happy with him going for it there than in the first quarter. You know, you're playing those conditions. The defender falls down. You hit a pass. You know, something happens. You get a first down. At least try to get a little bit closer and make it more of a chip shot because 45 yards is not a chip shot in those conditions.
And they started that drive at the 33 and played so conservatively as if they were trying to tie the game. And I understand Stidham's a backup, but he shouldn't be on the team if he can't throw. You got to have someone in there that you have confidence throwing the football in the AFC Championship game. Yep. I'm not talking about a regular season Jet game where our backup quarterback sucks and we sit there and kneel on it three times because everybody just wants to go home. This is for the chance to go to the Super Bowl. You got to let the kid throw it. You got to try to give him protection. And you know what? I'm sorry. Stop throwing it left. He's a right-handed quarterback. Roll him right. Give it a shot that way on these little short passes. Maybe it's easier to throw when he's on the run, not going against his body for a guy that hasn't thrown a pass in 2 years.
And Kev, you were talking about that the fourth quarter field goal attempt at 10-7. Yeah. So Lutz tries it, and it's partially blocked by the defensive lineman, right? But here's the thing, and this comes out later on, which – I guess Peyton didn't know about this, but apparently Lutz noted later on that the snow was so thick he couldn't see the yard lines and had to estimate where to spot the ball. Did Peyton not have an idea about this? I mean,
it's on the field. You don't see it?
Wow. I just, like, Oh my God! For the kicker to tell you that he was unsure where to spot the ball because he couldn't see. I mean,
true transparency, I went out to shovel at the half. We had snow here in the Northeast. When I got back, I left the field was great. I got back in, there was snow all over it. I'm like, what did I miss? You guys commented back like a lot. It's a blizzard. I'm like, what the hell happened? We were thinking no precipitation leading up to the game, and all of a sudden, the second half of the third quarter, the fourth quarter was like impossible to navigate.
Yeah. I mean, they could have played another three games and Denver wouldn't have had 100 yards.
Yeah, I mean, I thought he got too aggressive early and then too conservative late. And
yep.
I think this loss goes on Peyton's shoulders.
All right. NFC, so Seattle beats the Rams 31-27. They punched their ticket to the Super Bowl. Darren?
Listen, Seattle
comes up with the win.
Yep. This was, it wasn't hard, but this was the game of the weekend. This was a great game. This was two high-powered offenses, two defenses trying to keep up. And Seattle did a couple things really well. First of all, Darnold was clean. And you don't expect Darnold to be clean. You always expect at least one interception somewhere or a fumble somewhere. Perfectly clean game for Darnold. Walker, without Charbonnet, did enough. He wasn't amazing, but they were able to give him the ball 19 times just to kind of slow down the Ram offense a little bit. And, you know, Kupp contributed. Bobo made his fourth catch of the year, UCLA kid, but it was for a touchdown on a really nice little skinny post route. I thought it was pretty cool. I thought the L.A. Ram defenders, cornerbacks, had a tough day. You'll get to that in a second, Kev. And the one thing I thought, even though they gave up three sacks, I thought the O-line did enough to give Darnold a chance to throw. The defensive side of the ball, the one thing I'll say is that, you know, they had bend but don't break in the first half. They gave up a couple drives but held them to field goals, and that was pretty much the difference. And then the late drive, they got them on downs. 14 plays, 84 yards, and they were able to get the hold. And the last thing I'll say is I don't know if anybody can cover JSN. I don't know how he gets open. You're saying key on this guy, and yet he's wide open for a touchdown at the end of the half, which kind of seemed like it was the momentum turner, Kev, because the Rams come down the field and they take the lead. Seattle doesn't have that much time. They storm back, and they're not just going in there to tie. They go in there to take the lead back. Yeah. I thought it was an impressive way they turned around. Kev, what happened to the Rams this week?
There's about 5 minutes of game action there that really killed the Rams there. You know, they get the ball at their own 28, minute 30 left in the first half. Run the first down. You know, you always want that clock to start, and, you know, you're trying not to leave too much time, but then Stafford goes two incompletions, and they're punting. And that gives Darnold 54 seconds from his own 26. And you're thinking, they have a good chance of getting the field goal range. And then, like you said, JSN beats Curl on that double move there to the outside. Big gain of 42 yards. That set up the touchdown that eventually, you know, that was a 14-yard catch by JSN. Where, again, just the guy's uncoverable.
10 receptions, 155 yards, and you know the Rams are keying on him.
Yeah. So all of a sudden, now it's, you know, so the Seattle goes into the locker room leading. They get the ball first. Rams do the good job of forcing the punt, four plays in the punt. And then Xavier Smith, who had muffed one earlier. And what did I say last week is one of the keys for the Rams. Mm-hmm. Don't screw up special teams. Well, they had the muffed earlier, and then he's trying to catch his punt. He's dropping backwards, falling down backwards. Hits him in the chest on the ground, and who was there to pick it up? It was recovered at the 17.
Yeah, I don't know who had it.
First play, like you said, was that touchdown pass to Bobo.
Yep.
And Kev.
Go ahead, G. There was two touchdowns in less than 5 minutes there, and all of a sudden they're down two scores, and they never were able to catch up.
You mentioned it with Smith earlier in that game. So early in that game, that punt, so it's right to him, and he bobbles it. It falls on the floor, and he's able to get it. And the only reason he recovers that himself is because the defender actually ran past him. He was 2 yards past him at that point. And on the second one that actually does get turned over, he's actually, you could see the defender like stop a yard and a half, 2 yards in front of him. And when he drops that ball, he's right on top of it. Bang. And that, like you said, I mean, that's huge. That muff punt is huge.
But Rip Woolen says, hold my beer. We're going to stop you on fourth down, but I'm going to taunt you and give you a touchdown. So it's like both teams did their best, even though the Seahawks didn't technically turn it over. Woolen comes out like a jackass and taunts the Rams sideline, and he gets a little bit of a warning from the ref and continues to go. It's like,
and then he gets beat on the next play for the touchdown.
And that was it. He got beat like a rented mule.
Now, we texted a little bit, and the thought did cross my mind. So, with 5 minutes left, the Rams get to the Seattle 6, down 31-27. Surprisingly, no points in the fourth quarter. Incompletion at 3rd and 4, 4th and 4 at the 6. I understand why McVay would go for it, because you've just had to – I mean, it was a beautiful drive. You think you got the defense on its heels. Any thoughts of the field goal there?
I did think of it, but I'm so conservative, it's ridiculous. Gino, say what a real fan was thinking.
Well, so here's the thing. We always talk about points on the board. We're always talking about it. Put the points on the board whenever you can. But does he think at that point he's got enough time to get the ball back again to actually win the game? Because now you got to start putting yourself in the position. Do I have enough for a second drive? Am I actually gonna get the field goal? Still be down one at that point, right? Because it's 31-27 at that point.
Yep.
And then still be able to get the ball back to actually win the game. So, listen, I thought about it. For me, I know why he went. I think he probably had to go at that point. You know, it's going back and forth. They're both scoring. I mean, 6 touchdowns for 2 quarterbacks. So they're both, you know, getting the ball in the end zone. I felt he had to go for it, but, you know, I get the point because we're always saying it. If you have the chance, put the points on the board. So I get it.
I think it was 4th and 1 or 4th and 2 from the 6 I go for. 4th and 4, I wasn't sold on it. And I'm saying to myself, wow, okay, I could give up a touchdown and I'm still in a 1-score game. That's what I'm thinking about. All of a sudden, if I give up a first down and it seems like it's under 2.5 or whatever and they're moving, I let them score. And I sit there and say, okay, all right, Stafford, get it for me. But I know I'm conservative with that, but I thought 4th and 4 makes it a harder play. I know the Rams have the utmost confidence in their offense. I thought Seattle did a great job. They had like 9 guys on the line. They dropped a bunch of them back, and they confused Stafford. Not easy to do. And, Seattle's defense, despite giving up 479 yards, found a way to hold, bend and not break, which was pretty exciting for them. Jake?
So, Darren, a little under 5 minutes at that point. I think it was like 4:59. So you're kicking the field goal there?
I was. Yeah, I was kicking.
Okay. Listen, I can understand it. I can understand it. You just got to hope your defense comes up with a stop after that.
If I get the stop, I'm kicking a field goal. If not, I'm letting them try to score a touchdown, and I'm down 8, and I have a chance to come down there and tie the game. That's the way I'm thinking. Jeff?
My feeling is that you've stopped them a couple of times, so if you don't get it, you've gotten pinned inside the 10. If you give up the field goal, or if you take the field goal, after you kick off, we know that the NFL nowadays, you're starting at the 30, worst-case scenario usually. Yep. And especially with Shaheen back there, you never know if he's going to take it to the house.
No doubt.
So, you know, McVay had a tough choice there. I don't think he was wrong either way.
Yeah, I mean, for the three of us, we're much more concerned about Peyton not kicking that field goal than McVay.
Well, I mean, it's a different scenario. I'm still trusting Matt Stafford, knowing that I can throw the ball to Nacua. I can throw the ball to Devontae. I can hit Parkinson, who, by the way, that drop was huge. He might have walked in. Now, again, they said that on the broadcast, and we can't see where the safeties are behind. So I'm only going by what they said, that he might have walked in if he catches it. But then he'll definitely be inside that 6 with a first down there, and that would have been a really interesting play. But, I mean, I know that the hand gets in front of him, but Parkinson had his hands on the ball, turned, but did not catch it, and that was That was a crucial play. But again, great game. You know, listen, two rivals. Great, just fantastic game. It really was.
And so listening to the two games, my goodness, how much better is Burkhart and Brady than Romo and Nance?
Well, Romo Nance has a romance with Bob Kraft. He just can't root for that team enough. And listen, whatever. I mean, you know, he knows the guy, whatever the hell it is. But it's hard to listen to. Brady has improved dramatically as a broadcaster. I feel like hate him a little bit more, but I think Brady's real good.
I hate Brady, but I got to give him credit. He's actually not bad to listen to.
He's teaching you some stuff, which is pretty good out there, which is what we want.
All right, so Super Bowl 60 is set up. Opening line is Seattle minus 3.5. It's now at 4.5. Over under at 46.5. We will talk more about that next week as we get into the preview to the Super Bowl. Let's stick with the NFL. Darren, Hall of Fame ballots came out.
Listen, I hate Bill Belichick with a passion. He basically spit on my team, but I was going to use an H instead of the P, but I'll keep the spit. But he deserved. How is he not a first ballot Hall of Fame? I mean, it's not even debatable. I mean, I don't even know how that happens. Listen, you want to sit there and say Deflategate? You want to sit there and say Spygate? You want to sit there and say all those things? Listen, nothing happens with those things. Guy has won more Super Bowls than anybody else. He goes in. Listen. We view Parcells, arguably the three of us, as the best coach ever or the best coach we've ever seen, along with Belichick. But the fact of the matter is, I don't know how this happens, G. I don't get it.
We talk about this a lot when we start getting into Hall of Fame balloting through all sports. This one, I don't get it all. I don't get this one at all.
Thought it was ridiculous.
Yeah, me too. Kev, any thoughts?
Yeah, I echo the same as Darren, basically. You know, it was absolute bull that he's not in the Hall of Fame at first ballot. I mean, if 6 Super Bowls as a head coach, 2 more as an assistant, how is he not in the Hall of Fame?
Yeah,
it's an absolute joke.
And if he retires right now, in a few years, he's not in the Hall of Fame in the first ballot? I guarantee you he is.
He should be.
He will be.
I mean, you know, they changed the rules this year. Now you have the ability to get elected after 1 year of retirement.
Yep.
Or 1 year out of the league. I think, you know, a couple of years ago, if it was still the 5 years, he would have been the first ballot. I think they're afraid of him coming back still.
I guess, but, you know, it doesn't make any sense.
You just wonder in that room, how much pull did Bill Polian have? Because, you know, Polian hates Belichick.
Yeah,
but
vice versa.
You know, the problem, which we all talk about is, if you're really getting into this and the Hall of Fame is supposed to show the history of the NFL, even if you're Polian, how is Belichick not there?
Yeah.
Good, bad, indifferent. You may like him, hate him. It doesn't matter. How is he not there? And that it's
exactly.
It's a huge, you know, black mark on the NFL committee right now. This is going to get talked about constantly.
Yep. It's just dumb.
All right, we had some more coaching hires happen. Mike McCarthy gets hired by Pittsburgh. Todd Monken goes to Cleveland. Jeff Hafley goes to Miami. Darren?
Yeah, Jesse Minter to Baltimore. Basically, the AFC North decided that everybody should be a new coach. Listen, McCarthy's been a guy that's rumored for a while. The thought was, a lot of people are saying the reason he was brought in was to try to keep Rodgers. I find it interesting that they're really clamoring for a 42-year-old that couldn't scramble or run for his life in the playoff, and that was probably the reason they lost. You almost have to think that they had to think about Will Howard or try to draft somebody else and not necessarily go into the Rodgers bandwagon, as much as I love Aaron Rodgers, not the case. Monken, you know, interesting. Cleveland was an interesting job because whoever took the job had to keep the D coordinator, right? They didn't have a choice. They're not bringing in their entire staff, you know. Yep. You know, it's not a weakness of the team, but Monken gets the job, and he was supposed to go to the Giants as the OC. So now the Giants are in a little disarray. You know, Jesse Minter, I mean, he's never coached before either. We'll see what we get. and Hafley, you know, listen, Green Bay's defense was good, but it didn't look as good when when Parsons wasn't there. So we'll see what Halfley does in Miami.
And the other one was Buffalo promoted Joe Brady.
Yeah, I thought that was going to happen the day he got let go. I thought Brady would be the guy.
Is there any laughter for you guys that Robert Saleh brought in Brian Daboll to be his offensive coordinator?
They became friendly.
Shared commiseration there between the two.
You know, he's got a young quarterback, and he wants a guy that can mold a young quarterback, and Daboll can do that, or shown that he can do it. McDaniel goes out to the Charger land, which I think is an interesting one. Petson comes to Detroit. Bieniemy goes back to Kansas City. Zach Robinson heads to Tampa Bay. I mean, there's a lot happened on the offensive side.
A lot of movement. And, Darren, then we have the New York Jets.
They fired everybody because it wasn't Glenn's fault. It was everybody else's. And you know what? Listen, no position group looked good enough where I'm sitting there defending it. So I really can't get mad at the moves that they've made. They brought in a defensive coordinator named Brian Duker, who, you know, has never called plays before, was on Glenn's staff in Detroit, was the secondary and pass defensive coordinator in Miami last year. What do I know? That means Glenn's going to have a big hand in the defense, I think. That's really what it comes down to.
They did retain the special teams coach.
He's good.
That's the best part of the team.
He's good. You know, I'd be fine. I'm fine with him. Upgrade every other position. They Engstrom, they brought him for 1 year and they blew him out. And I don't know how much you can really blame him when he has no talent at quarterback to play with. But that has they offered the job to John Gruden, who I guess laughed for about a half hour before telling them no. I'm going to work for Aaron Glenn. He's thinking to himself,
with no quarterback. Like,
I'll take the head coaching job next year if I want it, Woody. That's basically what he said.
Yeah.
And listen, there's lots of and Gannon goes to Detroit from Arizona. So that was the other. I'm not Detroit, Green Bay from Arizona. That's the other defensive coordinator. But listen, the Jets are in disarray. The Giants look like they're the dream matchup right now in New York, and the Jets look like it's the joke of jokes. They were really, really bad, but one game too good to get the one pick. So you won't get your quarterback till next year. And now you got to hope that you can put enough talent around there and that Glenn either improves or doesn't screw it up. That's really what we're hoping for, Kev.
If Glenn is that bad and they go 2-15 again next year, then you got the number one pick.
You get the number one pick, a new coach, and we move on.
Yep, almost exactly. At the end of January, only two head coaching jobs remain open, the Raiders and the Cardinals at the moment. So we'll see what happens with those. All right. Let's move over to Kev.
One other NFL point. Did you guys get phone calls to be the Pro Bowl AFC quarterback? Because eventually they went down all the way down the list to Shedeur Sanders.
So sad.
Nobody else wanted to go.
It is that bad, actually. It really is that sad. That Shedeur Sanders is an all Pro Bowl player. Now, don't get me wrong. I mean, listen, this kid could turn out to be something good, but this wasn't the year he did it.
No.
You know?
Yeah. I'm not trying to pile on Shedeur. I mean, Cleveland sucks. We know that.
Well, but, we're going to find out if Todd Bowles can do something with him. That's what we're going to find out.
Yep.
All right. Move over to the NHL. So Islanders look like they're getting a little busy with moving players already. Through 53 games, they're 28-19-5 with 61 points. Kev?
Does that include tonight's win again against the Rangers?
That does not.
That does not.
Showing how you like piling on the worst team in the East.
Yes.
Because they've owned you for a career.
Yes. I'm not too proud to admit it. Yeah, Darche's went out and made a couple moves this week, shockingly, with the two local teams. You know, Monday he goes out, gets Carson Soucy, the defenseman, for a third-round pick. You know, he's a left shot. Basically, he's a replacement for Romanov, who was out in November. They've rotated through all these young defensemen. They finally get a stay-at-home type of veteran there. Low-cost third-round pick. I think it was a good, solid move, good pickup. And then yesterday, from the Devils, they get Andre Palat, who, you know, 34, but, you know, he's one of those guys that come playoff time, he put up some real good, nice numbers, 20, 21, and 22 during Tampa Bay's three straight Stanley Cup playoff runs, including couple of semifinals against the Islanders. That he was always a pain in the neck to watch. They get a third rounder this year, a sixth rounder next year for Maxim Sipikov. Basically, they got the picks because they're picking up the salary from the Devils.
Yep.
One quick point on that. Also heard something, just listen, it may be hearsay, but they're hearing that may make a run at Stamkos to put him with Palat out of Nashville. Now, you're not going to get the third guy because Kucherov is not going anywhere, but you might get two-thirds of that line and hope for a little lightning in a bottle for a team that's been really young to have a couple of experienced guys that can put the puck in the net. That I don't know if it's going to happen, but boy, would that be interesting for this island.
That would be interesting.
As well as they're playing, it's still a dogfight just to get into the playoffs in the East right now because of resurgence from teams like Buffalo and Detroit. And you're sitting there and you know, they're in, but, you know, you're not in by a lot of points. So you got to make sure that you keep playing well. And they need to have a couple of veterans on that squad to help them with that up front, in my opinion.
And the team seemed to respond. You know, they came back, seven-game road trip. They got 7 points out west. You know, that was just fine. They came home. They pull a no-show against Buffalo, lose 5-0. Yeah. Roy benches Barzal in the first line for the entire third period. People are asking him, what'd you do that for? And go, they didn't deserve to play. They come out the next Patrick night. Wow. So they come out. They shut out the Flyers, which was a big win because the Flyers could have jumped them in the standings. And then tonight, 5-2 win over the Rangers. Like I said, Palat, power play goal and assist already in his New York Islander debut.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think the team's responded. I think the team knows that this front office is looking to make some moves and fortify some things. And boy, if Stamkos comes back, Darren, was that a pun intended? Catching lightning in the bottle?
I actually didn't even realize I said it. I'd love to take credit for it, but I didn't even mean it like that.
Now, those are the two local trades, but Darren, there was a bigger trade that happened within the last week.
Which I honestly, I don't
know. Calgary shipped Rasmus Anderson.
Oh, yeah, we said Rasmus Anderson. You know what? Calgary basically is waving the white flag. We're just not a good hockey team. We've been good enough to miss the playoffs for many years and just miss it where we don't get a good enough pick. So now what we get out of this is we get two first-round picks for the next 4 years in a row. So we try to rebuild. I mean, our goalie's a seventh-round pick. There's really not a lot of high picks on this team outside of guys that are like 36, like Kadri and Huberdeau, who was stuck with contracts that are too large. Listen, I think it was a good move for Vegas. I think Vegas gets to solidify with a very good defense, with very good defenseman that can score and play and block shots and do a lot of things that are great. And Calgary gets to actually just finally wave the white flag and try to be not just good enough to just miss. You might as well just tank it out, play hard, let the kids play, and see if we can do something with it. But it makes Vegas a much stronger team.
All right.
We have a native Canadian. We have White Cloud. That's always fun. Always fun to feel like that. And I was watching, you know, they did the Shorzy game. I don't know if you guys follow the Shorzy thing that's going on, the little phenomenon of the TV show. And he's a Calgary Flame fan. I was so excited. I had no idea. He was in the barn going nuts, being at the Saddle Dome. I was having a great time.
All right. Let's head over. Let's talk about some college basketball. We're getting into the month of February soon. Darren?
Listen, guys, we're going to sit there and we're going to just talk about a couple teams in the top 10 right now. It's early, so things are going to fluctuate. Teams peak early. Teams peak in February. Then it's Izzo time, as Gino likes to say. So here we go. The number one team in the nation is Arizona, undefeated still, great depth, balance, huge win in Provo. And I don't know if you've ever seen it. Hard to win in Utah when Kevin drops out somehow. Hard to win in Utah when you're playing in front of 20,000 people at the Marriott Center. The two team is UConn, so good defensively. I don't even think they're playing their best ball yet. They're number two. Three is Duke, young team. But it's the Boozer Show leading the way for them. Four is Michigan. They had to stretch early, G, where they beat three straight ranked teams by 30 points each. Never happened before. That's how explosive Michigan can be. Five, we get Nebraska. I'm going to touch on this team for a second. Had their first loss this week, Michigan. But this team, the mayor, Freddie Hoiberg, back in college, has this team rolling. Four starters average double figures. They outscore their opponents by about 15 points a night. They shoot 47.5% and hold their opponents under 40%. And, you know, Kev's back, just so everybody knows that we don't have any problems with a new wardrobe and everything. He's ready to go. And their opponents shoot under 40. They hold opponents to 38% from three. And this team averages 18.4 assists per game to only 9 turnovers. So Nebraska does a lot of things right. They're not great on the glass. They don't block shots. But Price Sanford, who was a transfer from Iowa, leading the way on this team with 17.4 points a game, 4.5 rebounds, 2 assists a game. So that's what Nebraska brings. Bring a lot of balance, bring a lot of scoring, and brings the mayor back and brings Nebraska to a level we have not seen before. But then we get to the 6 seeds, the team you've been following a little bit, Gino, the Gonzaga Bulldogs. So what do you think of the Zags?
Listen, 9-0 in the conference, 21-1 overall. Their loss, it was they had got caught with bad foul trouble to two of their guys, Braden Huff and Warley in that game. That was one of the losses you talked about to Michigan where they got blown out by 40.
Yep.
That's their only loss. They got good wins against Creighton, Alabama, Kentucky, and UCLA so far. They're going to get a big test this week. January 31st, they face off against division rival St. Mary's. That's always a big matchup. St. Mary's is 19-3 overall, so we'll see how this progresses. But Gonzaga's a team I'm looking at. I think they're going to move up the standings a little bit. They get this win against St. Mary's, they probably move up a spot or two.
Interesting for them next year, G, because they moved to the Pac-12, and with that's going to mean it not necessarily means anything great because it's Washington State and Oregon State only. But you get Boise State on the schedule, you get San Diego State on the schedule, yep. You get Utah State on the schedule, and suddenly it's not just St. Mary's 2 games, and they're not tested for 2 months after the early season tests. So we're going to see what they do next year. But right now they look good. The next team ranked is Michigan State, another team that Kev's been following closely. And this might be the most talented team Izzo's had in a few years, Kev.
Yeah, and you guys know me well enough. You know, I'm always a guy that looks for Michigan State in the NCAA tournament. I've always been an Izzo guy. And this seems like a classic Izzo team. I mean, you know, preseason they were ranked 22nd. They slowly worked their way up to 7th in the top 10 there in the AP. They're led by Jeremy Fears. Averaging 14 points, 9 assists, you know, really doing a good job. First ever Michigan State player with 15 points, 15 assists in the same game, which I thought was surprising when you've got, you know, guys like, oh, Magic Johnson who have played in that team.
And Mateen Cleaves.
And Mateen Cleaves.
Not Magic Johnson, but you know what I mean?
Yeah. And actually, he had a 17-17 game. That was against Maryland, which was the first time in Big Ten history that guy had at least 17-17. So that was a nice game for him there. A good season for him. They've got the bigs that is always likes. Kohler's averaging 13 points, 9 rebounds. Cooper's averaging 11 and 7.5 is at the center. So I think this, like you said, Darren, this is one of the Vizzo's better teams that he's had in a couple of years. They've only lost 2 games. They lost at Nebraska and home for Duke. Funny thing about both games. Against Nebraska, the score was 55-55 with 2:34 left. They lose 58-56. Against Duke, they were tied 55-55 with 1:59 left and lose 66-60 at home. So as long as they avoid 55-55 games, I think they're going to be okay.
Keep the fives out of it. Keep the fives out of it.
This feels like, you know, this could be, you know, the real good Izzo run here in the tournament with this team. This feels like a Tom Izzo Michigan State team, doesn't it?
It does. It does. And the talent because of Fears gives them something a little different than we've seen.
Yep.
And you know what they say, January, February, Izzo.
April.
Yep.
And the thing about Gonzaga, just to touch on them real quick, they have a back-to-the-basket center in Ike that not everybody has. Graham Ike started at Wyoming, transferred there for the last 2 years. He's a force down low that you have to play against, and he draws a lot of fouls. Eighth team in the country is Iowa State. This is a very talented team. They could easily win the Big 12 along with 5 other teams. And, you know, that's just one of those things that with them, they have good – they defend well. They have good offensive balance. They're good. The 9-team Illinois had a huge win this week. Freshman Wagler had 46. Young and impressive, can beat anyone. But then sometimes they have freshman inconsistency, they can lose to anybody, so you don't know. And 10 is Houston, who, despite giving up 90 a couple games back, still is third in the nation in defense. And and I don't even think they've clicked yet. And you know Kelvin Santos is going to have these teams going. Gee, I know you've been following the Johnnies a little bit closely. Thoughts?
Listen, I think they're gelling a little bit now. After tonight's win against Butler, they're 9-1 in conference, 16-5 overall. Their losses are against some pretty good teams. They're definitely within the top 20 ranked teams. Auburn, Alabama, Iowa State. Those are three of their losses. So the losses are against some good teams. Their only other losses are Providence and Kentucky, who played them really tough. They've now won 7 in a row. And coming up next week, they're going to have a big game, big test against UConn. I think that'll start setting the pathway to whether or not they're going to be at the very top or right underneath UConn as we get into February.
The veteran coaches, like Kev talked about with Izzo and you know, Kelvin Sampson, well, I mentioned Houston's going to get better, and UConn hasn't necessarily peaked yet. But Hurley, Pitino's the same type of coach. The team gets stronger as the year goes on. The defense ratchets up a little bit. The only thing with this team, they were the only team that didn't make the Elite Eight of the top two seeds last year. 7 of the 8 made it. It was St. Mm-hmm. John's that didn't. They're going to need to get point guard play out of somebody. That's really where the problem is with this team. A couple other teams just to touch on real quick. I mentioned them a couple weeks ago to Eugenio. I said you're going to like this team. Texas Tech, JT Toppin, averages 22 points, 10.9 rebounds. 4.5 of those are offensive. 2.1 assists, 1.1 steals, and 1.8 blocks a game. This kid does it all. They have a great point guard in Christian Anderson. They have a lot that goes on with this team. Texas Tech just outside the top 10, but they're dangerous.
Would that be a Toppin brother?
I think he is. I'd have to imagine he is. I never looked it up. Arkansas is playing well with Cal. Cal's got his team starting to peak a little bit. St. Louis, only one loss. It was a one-point loss to Stanford. This team is eighth in the country in scoring, 91.4 points a game. And the other team to look at is Miami of Ohio, undefeated in the MAC. They lead the nation in scoring with 94.6 points a game. Now, again, Miami hasn't played anybody. But the MAC isn't like the Sisters of the Poor. It's a decent conference that used to be stronger until now you could buy players. So if they have anybody that's good, somebody pays for them, and they don't get to keep them for 4 years, like the Wally Szczerbiaks of the world, where we watched the MAC explode back in the past. A lot of the cool things going on in college basketball. We're going to get more into it as we get closer, but this is just a little tease for where we're going to go going forward. Kev, you wanted to talk a little Australian Open, right? Or, G, you had something? Oh, Kev, okay.
Yep, Australian Open is going on right now. The first of the four majors, always the one that's sort of overlooked because they play at 3 o'clock in the morning, our time. men's side.
It's 3 in the morning. Okay.
Men's side, if I had a dollar to put down, you know, of course you're going to say, okay, Alcaraz is the one, Sinner the two, Zverev the three, and Djokovic the four all make the semifinals.
That's a Kevin kind of bet.
That's my kind of bet. Djokovic got lucky.
Quite.
So he was down 2-0 in the quarterfinals to Musetti. Looked like he hurt upper leg, thigh maybe. Yeah. So he had to resign in the third, or retire, I guess, in the third set. And so Djokovic was able to move on.
Now, in the round of 16, also, Djokovic got won by a walkover because his player couldn't play. So he's very rested for an older guy. He's played three sets in the last, 4 days, basically, before he plays. He had a walkover, and then he got his guy get hurt when he was down 2-0. So, interesting.
Yeah, so it's going to be interesting. So you got Alcaraz versus Zverev in the one semi, Sinner versus Djokovic in the other semi. Zverev did beat Alcaraz last year in the Aussie. So, you know, good chance. Alcaraz has got to be careful. Now, the quarterfinals, there's one point there. He's playing Alex Deminor.
Yep, the Australian. Yep.
Now, Deminor was serving, and the general umpire was going to call a time violation on him. And Alcaraz says, tries to understand what's going on, finally understands what's going on, and walks up to the general umpire. I wasn't ready yet. Alcaraz was clearly ready. He was clearly ready to receive the serve. And Alcaraz is like, it seemed too fast that there was no need for time violation. He goes up to the chair umpire. I wasn't ready. He gets his first serve. I mean, to me, that's some sportsmanship. That's some class that shows on the court.
You
just got to recognize people for doing that.
He's a kid, too. He's only, 22, 21?
22, 23, yeah.
Yeah, he's a kid. That's nicely done.
Yep.
Odds are you're going to see Alcaraz versus Sinner again, but we'll see.
It'd be hard to bet against that. Yep. Women's side, a little bit less chalk. One seed Sabalenka, always there in the finals or quarterfinals, semifinals, it feels like. She'll be going against Svitolina. On the other side, it's going to be the 5 seed Rybakina versus the 6 seed Jessica Pegula, our U.S. hope.
Hasn't lost a set yet, Pegula.
Yeah.
And the name sounds familiar. I'm sure we've talked about it before. She's the daughter of Terry Pegula, who's the owner of the Bills and the Sabres. That's the last round. Svitolina beat Coco Gauff. And, you know, Gauff is pretty upset. She leaves the court. She goes under the tunnel. She's on like this little ramp going up to the locker room. And she starts smashing her racket. She's pissed. She's not happy with the way she played. And also everybody's saying, oh, what a poor sport. What temper tantrum, everything else. To me, she's not on the court. She's going where she thinks is a private area. And she takes out her frustration. Isn't an athlete allowed to take out their frustration when yes. they think it's in private?
Of course it is. Of course it is.
I mean, Coco Gauff got really a bad rap online for really nothing that she did wrong.
Listen, for years we've seen, tennis players get picked on, sometimes deservedly so, McEnroe, sometimes with some outburst,
yep.
particularly Americans. Sometimes, Serena, the only one I really thought was worth it was when she went out with Osaka. Outside of that, I think that they just picked on her a little bit. Coco Gauff has never been anything but classy on the court. There's no reason for anyone to say anything negative about Coco.
And unfortunately, everybody has a camera in their hand now. So,
yep.
All right.
It's utterly ridiculous.
Kev, let's talk a little golf for a sec.
Yeah. So this past weekend was the American Express, formerly known as the Bob Hope Classic. Start with the one kid there, Blades Brown, 18-year-old kid, just graduated from high school a couple weeks ago. He turned pro instead of going to college. Played on the Corn Ferry tournament in the Bahamas the previous Sunday through Wednesday. As a 18-year-old finished 17th place. Pretty good round. Flies from the Bahamas on Wednesday to get to California for Thursday to play the American Express. First round, 67. Second round, he misses a 6-footer on 18 to settle for a 60. Not bad for an 18-year-old who just got done with high school.
Actually, flat out awesome.
Good third round, 68. Finally faded in the fourth round. I mean, he's only down one to Siwoo Kim going to the fourth round. He faded in the fourth round. I think the pressure, the everything, 8 straight days of playing PGA Tour golf. First guy to ever do it. But the winner, if I had to tell you one name that was going to win, Scottie Scheffler.
Yeah, pretty much.
He wins by 4. That gives him 20 wins and 4 majors before turning 30. Only 2 other guys have done that.
Tiger and Jack, maybe?
Hey!
Very tough to pick those two. Gee, I'm proud of you.
Yep. So some of the stats here are just incredible. In the official world golf rankings, Scheffler's 1, Rory's 2. The difference between Scotty and Rory is the same as between Rory and Kyungnam Kang, who was ranked number 677th in the world.
Holy cow, I didn't know that. Oh, my God.
Wow.
The last 5 years, Scotty's got all 20 of his wins. Second place is Rory with 10. Third place is Scheffler with 6. If he took just the wins that Scotty has by 4 or more shots, he's got 9 wins by 4 or more.
Jesus. Wow.
He'd be second right behind Rory.
Unbelievable.
Since last May, 5 wins by 4 or more shots, 3 finishes outside the top 5.
Wow.
It's amazing.
Last 13 starts and overall, 7 wins, no worse than a tie for 8th.
He's just boring as hell, so no one talks about him.
His last 81 events, which covers his time frame of winning 20 tournaments, that's 24.7%. He's finished outside the top 15, including missing cuts, 18% of the time. He's more likely to win than finish worse than 15th.
That's unbelievable.
I mean, the numbers this guy's putting up is just, rivals what Tiger's doing, and the competition's there.
Yeah. Oh, no, these guys are great.
I mean, the fact that he's that far head and shoulders above everybody else is just unbelievable.
That Koepka's back to compete with him a little bit. Just give another
Those 20 wins are in 151 career starts. So right. Think about that for a second. He's got 20 wins in 151 starts. It's just
he had none in his first 70.
It's not a sport where this happens.
Yeah.
So he's got 20 in his last 81, Kev. That's a stat right there, man. Let me tell you.
Craziness.
All right. NBA trade deadline next Thursday, February 5th. Could be active for our locals, Kev.
Well, the biggest name floating out there is Giannis.
Yep.
He's currently out with the cast ring, so he's going to miss a couple weeks coming up right after the trade deadline. But I think Milwaukee is realizing that maybe it's time to start breaking this up. They've got two ways of going, either keeping Giannis and trading off a whole lot of other stuff, or trading Giannis to just go for the total rebuild. He's going to also be eligible after the season for the four-year, $275 million extension. So with the way these guys play nowadays, he's getting about $1 million a game that he plays.
Yeah, basically.
If they do trade him, they're looking for picks. The problem is, if you take a look at tradable first-round picks, OKC, Brooklyn, Charlotte, Memphis, Sacramento, Utah, and Washington. Those seven teams control 50% of the tradable first-round picks for the next 7 years. These seven teams afforded picks, including which is unbelievable that OKC has all these picks.
Oh, my God.
Coming off the title.
Presti has been amazing there.
Do they want to just go for the super team and trade some of these picks to get Giannis?
They could.
And still have a lot of ammunition for other stuff.
Listen, the Knicks are rumored to be hot and heavy, but they don't have the picks to do it.
The Knicks have one tradable pick. They've got a couple of pick swaps they can do in the first round. They'd have to look at trading, you know, Bridges and Anunoby and some of these guys to try and match salaries because they are also hard up against that apron.
Washington just got young if they feel like they can bring Trae Young and Giannis together.
Yep.
Can't imagine Sacramento being anywhere anybody wants to go. You know, Memphis, same way. I can't imagine him wanting to go to some of these cities. You figure he wants to go somewhere big. The teams that are rumored were Golden State and the Knicks were the two top teams for it. And, you know, I don't know. I just – the NBA, I don't know.
The one Knicks trade that keeps coming up is them trying to acquire Drew Holiday. So we'll see if that actually has any traction.
Well, here's the problem with the Knicks if you watch this team a little bit. They last night they pulled away because they benched Towns in the fourth quarter for the last six and change. And you can't have Brunson and Towns on the court at the same time down the stretch of playoff games with an offensive-minded coach where defense isn't really, you know, the heart and soul of the team right now. So it's almost like Towns is a guy that you can put on the bench. They're putting Robinson out there who, if they decide to foul him, shoots whatever from the line, but it's less than 50.
Not good.
And it's like the Knicks are looking at a lot of things that are a little scary right now. That's what it comes down to. I mean, listen, there's a long way to go to the playoffs. The teams have time to get things together, and it's not like Detroit is superior. It's not like Philly is better. It's not like Boston, even though you got to give them credit, doing this without Tatum.
And
what Toronto's doing up there, Nick Nurse's team doing up there, doing really nice things there. But the fact of the matter is that, you know, the Knicks aren't out of it, but they got to figure out a rotation for this team. And the West is a lot better. I don't know. There's not really much more to say.
Yeah,
the West can steamroll anybody. OKC and San Antonio look like the two best teams in the league right now.
The NBA is so bad that, and you know how big a fan my son was.
Yep.
Especially the Celtics. And you would think that as a Celtic fan, you've got to be happy watching this team without Tatum doing as well as they are.
Absolutely.
My son has no interest in the NBA.
He got too old. He's 22.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The NBA's for
15-year-olds now.
They've aged out my 21, 22-year-old son.
I'm sorry, I exaggerate. He's only 21. It's scary. It really is.
All right. Baseball, we had one trade that happened, Darren.
Yeah. Oh, well, I mean, I was going to go into college football real quick, and I thought we'd close with baseball.
Good, so, okay. Got it.
We had an interesting thing. Dorian Mensa, the quarterback for Duke, signs a contract, breaks the contract, wants to go to Miami, becomes a legal case. They settle out of court, so we don't know exactly how it breaks out, so he gets to go to Miami. The question is, guys, and it's all this with college, and we're going to talk about Bediako, who I should have brought up there in college basketball too. If these guys sign a contract, aren't they responsible to hold on? They're paid now. It's not – you're not a kid anymore now. If you're a paid athlete – you know, I mean, I saw Deion have a whole bunch of fines for the kids now if they don't do this or they don't do that. Deion has a whole list of things he's going to fine them on. You have to be able to honor a contract. If we're teaching 19, 20, 21-year-olds that they don't have to honor contracts, what kind of lives are these guys going to have?
Yeah.
It's just sad.
And it's what can you do for me? That's all it is.
And that's what we're teaching these kids now. That's all we're teaching them. And same thing with Charles Bediako, who's a – Canadian-born kid, went into the NBA draft at a high school, was undrafted, got the two-way contract with the Spurs, played 3 years back and forth with the G League, and then applied to get his reinstated to college and was able to go to Alabama with 4 years of eligibility. What are we doing? There's no way that this is normal. There's no way that this is right. If we're going to pay these guys, then they get contracts. They don't get to come to the league.
Yeah.
They don't get to come to college. You know, I'm at the point now, have a semi-pro league, and just let me watch the regular kids that want to play college basketball. And you know what? The tournament won't be ruined, and I'll still be happy. Because what they're doing right now is ruining it. Because now no small school has a shot. You get to bring Charles Bediako in, who was arguably draftable 3 years ago, who got 3 years of G League, and you get to bring this guy in to reinforce you, Alabama. And I hate Nate Oates to start. That just makes it worse. He's a smug, arrogant jackass. But that's beside the point. But, you know, you allow this stuff to happen, and you're just ruining the sport right now. I don't get it, guys.
Yep.
Yeah. It's there needs to be oversight for all of these issues. It's just going to get worse. Without oversight, it's just going to get worse.
Yeah, I just – they have to come up with rules, Jay. They have to come up with something because right now it just doesn't make any sense. And it's a problem. It's just not right. What's going on right now is just bad for everybody.
Agreed. All right, baseball, we had one trade. Texas Rangers, Darren?
Yeah, I mean, you know, they go out and get Mackenzie Gore. And I got to be honest, if I'm a Met, you know, why couldn't I figure out a way to get Mackenzie Gore? You know, I'm not trying to say it's a bad thing. He's a young, fireballing lefty, walks a few too many guys. But, you know, it goes along with your squad when you're kind of young. You have a young rotation. He's got a little bit of veteranship, but he's not too old. He's someone you could probably lock in for a little bit with a contract that's not going to kill you. I was a little disappointed that the Mets didn't try to look into the Mackenzie Gore, trade partnership. I don't know. I thought it might be a guy that they were looking at that they could look at. I didn't even know he was on the table. He was a big part of a trade from a couple of years ago. They got from the Padres in the Soto deal.
For the Soto, yep.
Outside of that, Harrison Bader was the only other thing I really saw this week. Goes to the Giants. You know, everybody likes Harrison Bader for about 100 games till he gets hurt, but he had a pretty good run with the Phils last year. So,
yep.
All right, let's get into some buried treasures, Darren.
Got a couple for you this week. All right, and and one from our friend Joe because he gave me one. So let me just find my treasure. Sorry about that. Okay, a couple of them are going to be a couple of questions for you guys. All right, but the first one I'm going to start was a football one, real quick. Jim Brown at Manhasset High School here on Long Island. As a senior, averaged 39.6 points per game in basketball, 14 yards per carry in football, still a record, by the way, and he pitched two no-hitters. You want to talk about a guy that was about as well-rounded an athlete as you could find? Jim Brown, by the way. Okay, here's the trivia question. We'll make it real quick. Five schools have produced a U.S. president and a Super Bowl-winning quarterback. Any guesses for anybody? Three.
Michigan.
Yes. Who's the president?
Ford.
Yep. And Brady. Okay, you got one. Any other guesses, or are we going to go past it?
I don't have any other guesses.
Okay, Navy had Jimmy Carter and Staubach.
Yeah.
Stanford had Herbert Hoover with Elway and Plunkett.
Wow.
Delaware, Biden and Flacco. And of
Delaware,
course,
wow.
The one everybody knows, Miami of Ohio, the great Benjamin Harrison along with Big Ben. quick hockey one before I get into a couple baseball ones. The biggest ever American TV audience for a hockey game was 34.2 million viewers. Who played in that game?
USA-Russia?
You got it. The rerun of a game that was already played is the most broadcasted game in history. The 8 o'clock rerun that night, 34.2 million people.
Do you believe in miracles?
Do you believe in miracles, game? Absolutely. Gino, I know you hate this when I go with Bob Gibson or Tony Gwynn, but I have to give you one for Bob Gibson. I'm sorry. In 1968, he allowed 38 earned runs and 34 starts, okay? He averaged 8.96 innings per start. So what did they have to do? They lowered the mound 5 inches after that year. It was really for the mound lowering. Eric Davis, people don't talk about how good he was for a while before he got hurt. Over 162 game span, and we remember because we played Stratomatic back in the day. From June 18, 1986 to July 10, 1987, he hit .307 with an on-base of .405, a .629 slugging, hit 49 homers and had 93 stolen bases.
Wow.
I'm just saying, we forget how good he was because it just fell apart on him. You know, it was just one of those things. And then the last one I'm going to go with is the Joe one because Joe gave us one that was pretty good. The last three popes that have been, you know, sworn in, so to speak, 2005 Pope Benedict, 2013 Pope Francis, 2025 Pope Leo, all 3 years, Seattle was a one seed and made it to the Super Bowl. So next time a pope is getting, we have a new pope, put the ranch on Seattle. Have them win and get to the Super Bowl. Put the ranch on Seattle in the NFC. And those are my buried treasures for the week.
All right.
Anything else before we wrap up, boys?
We can wrap it up, Darren.
We are the Sports Kings from Queens. I'm Darren here with Kevin, here with Gino. Talk about the wild and wacky world of sports, a wacky world where the most watched hockey game ever was on a repeat because this country can't grasp the sport of hockey, which drives me nuts. Please download the podcast anywhere you get a podcast, whether it be an Apple product, Spotify, TuneIn, whatever you like. We're posting a ton on social. Please join the family. Join us. We want more people. And without any further ado, may your sports be with you.